Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night on a Friday. It has taken a while to get to this point, but we are here. It has been a good week. It's going to be a great weekend. Welcome in to 101.3 ESPN at 101.3ESPN.com. You can always find us with that free app download, 101.3 ESPN. The app is available in the Google Play Store and in the Apple Store, the iTunes Store as well. You can also listen to us on your Alexa, your Amazon Echo. Just ask her, hey, Alexa, enable 101.3 ESPN, and then we will pop up as well. So we appreciate you however you are listening today. And a lot of people have been texting in saying, hey, Brady, I love the app. Arnie, Rich, Brady, love the app. Listen to you guys every day. Hey, my Amazon Echo works great with you guys. So we appreciate you how you are listening. Full show going up until 7 o'clock. Red Sox Rangers 7:20 with the pregame show over on AM 960 The Zone. Bruins hockey game 4 against the Lightning, and we will have that coverage at 6:30, if you want to get in for the face-off at the start of that, just after 7 o'clock. So tons to do today over the next hour, and I'm pumped up about this show because a couple of things that I've wanted to talk about all week that we can bring in now. First, though, I am excited for this weekend. I am very excited. This tonight sounds like it's going to be a washout. So stay in tonight, you know, watch sports, watch the Bruins, watch the Red Sox, watch the Yanks if you're on the other side of the lake. But and be safe, everybody, really. Be safe. Those high winds are coming. The rain is coming. The temperature has dropped. It looks like 15 degrees or so since we even started the huddle. So be careful out there tonight. But tomorrow looks gorgeous. 70 and sunny here on the Vermont side of the lake. I am pumped. I'm going to head downtown for the first time. Well, I've been downtown many times, but for the first time, I'm going to check out Beansy's Bus, the food truck that was featured on Man vs. Food. So I'm excited about that. I can't wait to try the hamburger on a glazed donut. Can't wait to try a Michigan dog from there. So Beansy's Bus in Burlington. I'll be there tomorrow. It's also Cinco de Mayo. And I have never really like gotten that into Cinco de Mayo. Like to me, it's just, you know, May 5th. But now that it's on a weekend, I am pumped for Cinco de Mayo. What do people do in the Burlington area, the northern New York area? Is anything going on for Cinco de Mayo? I know Elgato, there's one in Essex, there's one in Burlington, downtown. Anything going on there? Any places where I can get a great quesadilla, where I can get a Corona, where I can get tacos? Anywhere where I can go for Cinco de Mayo, I'm looking forward to that. So hit me up on the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. You let us know where there might be things going on. As for what's coming up today, something the Red Sox are doing that I'm not a big fan of, and there's not much that they've done under Alex Cora that I don't like. This is one of them. We'll talk with Cheryl Ring of Fangraphs. She'll join us at 6:20 to talk about what we were talking about yesterday. And what we were talking about yesterday was pitchers going away from their fastball. And she wrote an article about Sonny Gray of the Yankees and how Sonny Gray has almost stopped throwing his fastball altogether and how maybe the Yankees are the cause of that and how it's working against them. It's fascinating. Cheryl Ring, I can't wait to talk to her at 6:20, and then a rule change that should be mandatory in sports. We will talk about that. But first, the Celtics lead the Sixers 2-0 in the Eastern Conference semis. And the thing that I have taken away more readily than anything else from the first two games is that the coaching advantage is incredibly evident. The coaching advantage is incredibly evident. And what I mean is we've talked a lot this week in particular about how Brad Stevens puts his players in a position to be successful. And I keep finding more and more data and watching more and more film after watching the game that just supports that. What Brad Stevens is doing to Joel Embiid on the defensive side of things, where Embiid's on defense for Philadelphia, it's pretty amazing. If you watch this, if you watch these games, what do you notice? They are getting Joel Embiid in pick-and-roll situations at an extremely high rate. And so let's let's talk about this kind of logistically, okay? Just utilize Al Horford and Terry Rozier, and let's start there. Terry Rozier being guarded by a point guard, Al Horford being guarded by Joel Embiid. So they are getting Joel Embiid in pick-and-roll situations a lot, and they are making Joel Embiid choose what he's going to do, and they have an answer for everything that he's going to do. They have an answer for every choice that Joel Embiid can make to the point where Embiid is lost at times on defense. Think about this. So if we've got Rozier and Horford playing a pick and roll, Horford comes and sets the pick, Rozier comes off of it. Well, what are the choices that Joel Embiid has, and what are the possible outcomes? So just say that Joel Embiid then guards Terry Rozier. He switches. That's what we call in basketball. He switches. So he takes the guard, and then the guard takes Al Horford. Well, then that doesn't do Terry Rozier any good because he's got a guy 7 foot on him. But you've got Al Horford on a point guard rolling to the basket. That's a win for the Celtics. That's scenario one, and that's a win for the Celtics. Scenario two is Joel Embiid kind of sags back off the pick, and he goes to Al Horford. So he works on covering Horford. Well, then Terry Rozier is open because Embiid's gone back to Horford, and the guard who was guarding Rozier is still caught in the middle of the pick, and now Rozier's got freedom to do whatever he wants. That's a win for the Celtics. If Joel Embiid then kind of plays Rozier a little bit off the pick, and then tries to go back to Horford at the last second, well, now he's caught out of position. And what do we see? Yesterday in particular, it was 106-103 with about 11 seconds left, and that's exactly what happened. Embiid goes with Rozier for a second and then lunges back to Horford. He's caught out of position. Horford goes right to the hoop for a layup. Game over, 108-103. That's how it ends. No matter what Joel Embiid does, the Celtics have an answer for it. No matter what he chooses, Brad Stevens has the right personnel in place to make it work on Boston's behalf. And even if Horford gets by Embiid, well, then what happens? Well, defenders come to help, and now Horford is going to go to the line and get fouled because he's going to get hammered, or he's going to kick it out to a wide-open jump shooter, and we saw that too where guys are hitting wide-open threes. Brad Stevens is putting his players in the best possible position to be successful, and it's not just offense either. It is not just offensively. Horford's defense has been great because Stevens continues to put him in good position, also because Horford is a hard worker and someone who wants to be good on the defensive side of the ball. That's not lost, but Al Horford was the primary defender yesterday in 23 plays. The Sixers were 3 of 21 when they were guarded by Al Horford. Let me reiterate that. The Sixers were 3 of 21 when guarded by Al Horford last night. Horford is in the right position on offense. He's in the right position on defense. And Brett Brown has no counter to it. Brad Stevens is thoroughly out-coaching Brett Brown right now. And I don't understand. The Sixers were up 22 yesterday with, you know, a handful of minutes left in the first half. And it took all of 3-plus minutes to get that down to 4. And Brett Brown did not call one timeout. Now, he's not the reason they're losing in this series 2-0. He's not. But the coaching advantage that the Celtics are exhibiting is incredibly evident. Brad Stevens, to me, I said it earlier. I think it was Wednesday. I think he is right now. He's coach of the year. When you look at what he accomplished without Gordon Hayward all year, and you look at what he accomplished without Kyrie Irving for the latter month of the season, the last month of the season, when you look at what he did without Marcus Smart for a month, when you look at what he did without Daniel Theis, Brad Stevens getting this team, one, to the playoffs is an accomplishment, two, to a top four seed is a big accomplishment, and three, to be number two in the league or in the East, despite all that, it's incredible. Brad Stevens is a great head coach, and everybody that we've talked to this year, I remember, we've talked to Sean Grandy, radio voice of the Celtics, who does games on AM 960 The Zone for us, speaks unbelievable praise of Brad Stevens. We've had Ryan Rucco of ESPN on. Same thing. We've had Kurt Heel in Pro Basketball Talk. Same thing. They all say the same thing. He's a great coach, and he puts players in a position to be successful. And that is what it's all about. It's not saying that Brett Brown is a bad coach, but right now, the Celtics are out-coaching the 76ers, and they are out-playing the 76ers also. I mean, and it continue, I mean, we were talking about offense at the start of this. Marcus Smart said it after the game. Al Horford brings Joel Embiid away from the basket. Joel has to guard him. He has to guard the basket. He has to guard the five-man. That's hard. That's hard, especially when you're wearing a mask that's not comfortable. I'm not saying you can't do it, but it's hard. The Celtics are outplaying and outcoaching the Sixers right now in nearly every facet. Now, we've said all along the series doesn't start until the home team loses. And that hasn't happened yet. So the Sixers could go and hold serve through two games in the same way Milwaukee did. Maybe we walk in here, you know, on Monday with a very different story. But right now, this yesterday played out the way we thought it was. I caught grief on Twitter for my Celtics analysis yesterday, and I don't quite know why. Because it played out exactly like I thought. The Sixers were going to come out with energy. They did. They got up 22. If Boston could go into the half even or down only a few, they would be in a position to win. They did. I don't care how you got there, but they went into the half down only five. The Celtics were plus 32 on teams in overtime and in the second half going into yesterday. So we knew the coaching adjustments were going to kick in, and they did, and that was the game. That was the game. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN and 101.3 ESPN.com. If you want to get in, you can. 802-655-6672. You can do so on the Town Fair Tire text line. We look forward to hearing from you. And I got to say this. Red Sox lost yesterday, but that's not why I'm upset with them. The Red Sox are doing Blake Swihart an incredible injustice. And I understand he's a third-string catcher slash utility player, so I won't spend a ton of time talking about him. But I have loved a lot of what Alex Cora and this regime this year has brought to the Red Sox. I like the way they've handled David Price, even though he didn't pitch well again yesterday. I like the way they've gotten him to buy into the team concept again. I like the way they've limited Chris Sale from himself to a degree to try to keep him fresher. I like the way they handled Craig Kimbrell's personal family issues with his daughter who was sick in spring training. I like their offensive approach. I like the lineup construction to a large degree. I like his faith in Hanley Ramirez that he was right when we were wrong. I like a lot about what Alex Cora is doing. The one thing I don't like what the Red Sox and Cora have done is the way that they have utilized and treated Blake Swihart at the moment. Blake Swihart he's hitting 130, and he started yesterday, but he's played only three games to completion this year. He was out of minor league options. That's why they put him on the major league roster. They didn't want to put him on waivers, at which point they would have lost him for nothing. They didn't trade him, even though they have no use for him. They converted his positions every other day. He was a catcher one day, utility player the next day, and back and forth he goes. They put him on the roster. So they're caught in a catch-22. They can play him a lot and take away at-bats from somebody who they think really deserves it, and that's not the right answer. They can pinch hit him like they do and allow him to hit 136, and then he's got no trade value because his numbers are poor. So then you play him more to get his numbers up, and then you're taking away at-bats from somebody else. Blake Swihart has no business on this roster right now. He's essentially a waste of a roster spot at this point. From a business perspective, he makes zero sense. He's taking up a useful spot. From a personal standpoint, I feel bad for the guy that they've moved his position around for 2 years, and then they never use him, and they bring him out of the woodwork once a week, or as a pinch hitter, or as a replacement in the ninth of blowouts, and you can never get a rhythm. It's just, I feel like Blake Swihart has been done dirty. So that's where my beef is with the Red Sox. We were talking about David Price for a second. I'll go back to that. Something that Arnie was saying in the huddle that I disagree with. How he basically is ready to run Price to the bullpen and then out of town. David Price yesterday was no different than any other pitcher in baseball. Okay? He wasn't hit overly hard. What undid him was not massive hard hit balls. What undid him was free passes. He hit a leadoff guy in the second. He walked a leadoff guy in the fourth. Those come around to score. And when you as the pitcher pitch yourself into trouble, that's when bad things start to happen around you. Jackie Bradley Jr. doesn't make the Superman leaping catch and a ball goes for a double or a triple. J.D. Martinez does misplay a ball in left field and allow it to get past him and go to the wall. And Rafael Devers does make an error. When things are going, when you pitch yourself into trouble, you don't get that help from around you that you do when things are going well. That's just the way it works for pitchers. I know it as well as anybody. When you bring bad things on yourself, bad things happen around you. That's what happened to David Price yesterday. Now, yeah, David Price has been bad over the last three starts, but I'm not ready to ditch David Price. I think he's still got good stuff. What he needs to do is continue to get ahead in the count and get that change up. When he does that, he can be the David Price we saw the first two starts of the year where he went seven scoreless on average each time out. I'm not ready to give up on David Price. I think David Price has a lot to offer this team, and some Red Sox fans are shocking me earlier in the day when they are saying they are, you know, that Price is done, that Price is cooked. Well, you know what? Who do you want to go to? If you want to get rid of David Price and kick him out of the rotation, who do you want to go to? Brian Johnson, Stephen Wright, Hector Velasquez? I'm not trusting any of those guys over David Price. And before we address David Price, let's worry about Drew Pomeranz also, who's had 2.5 lackluster starts out of 3. I think Red Sox fans with their 22-9 record need to understand that the team's playing good baseball overall. Mookie Betts is incredible. They're hitting well. David Price can be part of the solution to this season, not part of the problem. I'm not ready to give up on him because what happened to him yesterday is not atypical from what happens to any pitcher. You give free passes on, especially leadoff batters, and you are destined for trouble. What happened yesterday is supposed to happen. Walk a leadoff guy, hit a leadoff guy, you're supposed to struggle. That's how it works. If he gets back to commanding the zone like he can, then I think David Price is more than okay. Again, you can get in 802-655-6672. We can get to him after the break. But when we come back, we talk a little more pitching. We talked about this yesterday. You talk about giving up on a guy. Yankee fans, some of them, ready to give up on Sonny Gray. Have we found the root of Sonny Gray's problems? We're going to talk about it with Cheryl Ring of Fangraphs.com. We're going to do it next on Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN.
Coming up on Sports
a Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, welcome back in on a Friday. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. 7:20 for Red Sox baseball taking on the Texas Rangers, and we will have that coverage for you at that time. We'll have the lineups for you at the conclusion of Champlain Valley Game Night 2. Lightning at the Bruins Game 4. 7 o'clock is the face-off, the puck drop. We will have it on AM 960. The Zone, remember, up this weekend, Kentucky Derby tomorrow as well. If you missed any of our talk in the huddle with Barry Abrams of ESPN, you can find that online at 1013ESPN.com. I am pumped. This has been a fun week. We've gotten a chance to do, now this is our third full show of the week because the Red Sox have played on Wednesday. They played early, and then Thursday, Friday, they've gotten to play later than their usual start time when they're on the East Coast. So we've gotten three full shows. We've got a chance to really tackle a lot of meaty subjects. And we got to talk a lot yesterday about pitching. And I'm like a kid in a candy store when we talk about pitching, and there has been something that's been bothering me. And now let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line where we've got Cheryl Ring, who covers baseball for Fangraphs.com, one of the best sites if you're a baseball fan. I mean, when you talk about baseball fan sites, ESPN, MLB.com, Baseball Reference, Fangraphs, those are the spots that you want to be. Cheryl Ring, an author at Fangraphs, is with us now. Cheryl, thank you for being with us on a Friday. How are you?
I am just fine. Thanks for having me.
Well, we appreciate you joining us. And what's been vexing me is Sonny Gray and a lot of Yankee fans in this area. And we talked about it with Buster Olney on Wednesday. We asked him about it. So Gray has been kind of a guy who, since he got to the Yankees, people have said he pitches defensive. And I take that to mean he doesn't trust his stuff and he nitpicks at the corners and he throws a lot of breaking balls simply because he doesn't trust his stuff. You wrote an article at Fangraphs that said, this might not just be a Sonny Gray philosophy. This might be a Yankees philosophy. Kind of tell us what you found out.
ask a couple of my colleagues at Fangraphs who write wonderful stuff, and I highly recommend it. We're talking for a while about how the Yankees have this philosophy of avoiding fastballs. Guys, even though the Yankees have fastest fastball velocity, basically in the history of a game with Luis Severino and Aroldis Chapman and Chad Green and Dellas Betances, Tommy Canely, you're talking about pitchers who have these elite fastballs, but instead they end up throwing their fastballs only 30% of the time, Masahiro Tanaka sometimes in the teens. And pitchers who join the Yankees tend to join into this philosophy. And one of the things I've always been curious about is whether this kind of philosophy, whether you use your fastball that sparingly when it's such an elite pitch, can ever backfire on a pitcher who has more of a pitch mix than, say, Luis Severino does. And so when I started digging into Sonny Gray's struggles, one of the first things that I noticed was he followed, just like all the other Yankee pitchers, this philosophy of I'm going to table my fastball and my breaking stuff. And I found really interesting array and his underlying ERA metrics, things like fielding independent pitching and expected fielding independent pitching, Sierra, that sort of thing. The less he uses his fastball, the worse those peripherals get. And it seems to me that that's partially because his command over his non-fastball pitches, stuff like his curveball, which is a great curveball, but he often throws that curveball outside the strike zone. So if you're talking about a pitcher who all of a sudden is using a curveball that's meant to be an out pitch as a get-ahead pitch, it's not going to work the same way. Sonny Gray seems to be the kind of pitcher who needs to use all of his pitches, mix up all of his pitches, and pitch off his fastball, which means he may be the one starting pitcher that doesn't fit well with the Yankees' philosophy.
And it seems odd because when the Yankees acquired Sonny Gray last year, he was lauded and praised for his ability to get ground balls with his sinker and his two-seam fastball, and that was important in a small ballpark like Yankee Stadium. Why would the Yankees try to change the thing that made him such an appealing trade candidate?
I think it goes to that organizational philosophy that when you have such good fastballs, you can use it as out pitches. But also I think that, and obviously the Yankees have far more information than I do, but I think when you have guys like Masahiro Tanaka, whose fastball is, it's decent, but it's actually by runs above average, it's not that. Starting pitchers with fastballs like that, Jordan Montgomery's fastball isn't the greatest. So you end up learning to pitch backwards, and pitching backwards does have some benefit because the fastball is the easiest pitch to hit. And when you're in a small ballpark, you tend to take that into account. But with Sonny Gray, I think it's different, and perhaps it's something that the Yankees didn't realize when they initially traded for him. Perhaps they thought he'd be a good fit for the system. Gray has always lived off that sinker. Even in 2016 when he was struggling, it was because he couldn't locate his sinker well. And I put a couple of graphs in my articles, a couple of heat maps that showed that he's missing swings and misses, especially to left-handed hitters and especially in, and those are the swings that he would ordinarily get with his two-seam or with his sinker because he's just tabled those pitches in favor of his curveball. Now, you've seen some organizations like the Astros, some very progressive organizations, do the same kind of thing with Lance McCullers. Well, I have this great curveball, just throw it all the time. But the problem is, as great as Sonny Gray's breaking stuff is, it's not at a Lance McCullers level. And Gray's greatness has always been in his ability to mix his pitches and get ground balls. He isn't a pitcher in the McCullers type mold where you can throw 60, 70, 80% curveballs and be effective that way.
Cheryl, we'll get you out of here on this. You mentioned Lance McCullers with the Astros, who throws his curveball a ton. Two other pitchers who are heavily breaking ball dominant as starters come to mind. One is Rich Hill in L.A. The other is Drew Pomeranz here in Boston, who we watch, who frustrates the heck out of me. So what seems to be an easy thing for me as far as the Sonny Gray discussion is the curveball is just a lower percentage pitch of being able to throw strikes. So you talk about his walk rate going up. You just can't control that pitch. It seems like an easy fix to me, but then I hear, well, he's going to fix his mechanics, and, well, he's going to have a personal catcher. They think those things are the issue. This seems like, why can't anybody figure this out?
Well, I will notice that in his last start, Sonny Gray's fastball percentage shot way up again. I don't know if somebody caught this, somebody read my article, maybe somebody was noticing that his fastball, his use is correlated with just how good he is. The interesting thing about Rich Hill and Drew Pomeranz that you mentioned, they're both left-handers. And their curveballs, they won't have the ability to throw multiple varieties of their curveballs for strikes. And that's why Rich Hill, when he's at his best, can be so efficient throwing so many curveballs. But Sonny Gray is a ground ball pitcher, or supposed to be a ground ball pitcher, whereas Hill and Pomeranz are both fly ball pitchers. And so it's a completely different philosophy. And I think that what the Yankees were doing was trying to turn Gray into something he's not. And he is one of those pitchers who needs that full five-pitch arsenal that he has, especially the fastball and the lefties, and especially in a small ballpark. It may be counterintuitive, especially in this day and age. Fastball is the easiest pitch to hit, and it is. When you have a pitcher like Sonny Gray who is so reliant on sequencing everything he throws, moves, it's important to show different looks, because otherwise hitters can just learn to recognize his curveball and lay off it.
Cheryl Ring, Fangraphs.com, Sabermetrics of Baseball, one of my favorite sites to go to. We use it a lot here for Champlain Valley Game. Now, Cheryl, we appreciate the time and keep up the great work.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Fascinating. Fascinating stuff. And look, I was always taught when we got into radio, you have two goals, entertain and inform. And that was a interview that was extremely informative. And that's why I love interviews like that. That interview made me smarter. So therefore, I have to imagine that it made a good majority of our audience smarter as well. And I love learning things. And it's fascinating. And as Cheryl's talking, I went and pulled up Sonny Gray's numbers for this year. It's fascinating the change in philosophy that he has employed. I mean, listen to this. This year, Sonny Gray has thrown 28% fastballs and 23% sinkers. So he's just over 51% with pitches with some real velocity to them. Last year, 63%. The year before that, 71%. I mean, 61% rather. So he is going down now. Again, in fastball percentage by a wide margin. And yes, she's right. This is a Yankees issue. This is what the Yankees do, and it's fascinating. The Yankees last July, this was as of last July, through the first half of last season, the Yankees as a staff threw 43% fastballs. 43%. Now, that changed, I'm sure, by the end of the season because Tommy Canley came over and David Robertson came over and some guys with some more velocity came over. But still, they were throwing less than 50% fastballs. And we talked about this yesterday. It's hard for me to understand and justify. Not so much justify. It's hard for me to wrap my head around that change in philosophy. Because I remember a time where get ahead, stay ahead. And the thing about that she mentioned about Sonny Gray is a curveball is a lower percentage pitch. So you Yankee fans that are frustrated with Gray, maybe be frustrated with the Yankees. A curveball is a low percentage pitch, and they're asking him to throw it now 25% of the time. He's throwing that pitch 25% of the time. Last year, he threw it 14. I mean, he is being asked to do something that he has not done in years, throw the curveball this much. 25% of the time. That's a hard pitch to control, and what's the result of that? Well, you get behind in the count, so then you have to throw a fastball, and you're predictable when you get hit. You have to throw a fastball. And his walk rate's the highest it's ever been because you just can't control it like that. The Yankees are asking Sonny Gray to be something that he is not. They're asking him to be something that he is not, and that is a tough position to be in. And I feel bad for Sonny Gray because I know what that's like. I've told this a lot. My first 3 years of college, I had one head coach, and my last year of college, I had a second head coach, and my changeup was my best pitch. I've told you this a bunch. I wanted to throw it all the time, and I wanted to throw it to righties. I wanted to throw it to lefties. I was confident in it. That's what I wanted to go to. And the first 3 years, it worked great for me. My last year, my head coach, he believed that you should throw, and he is correct in this. It just didn't work for me. He believed changeups were thrown to lefties, curveballs were thrown to righties because those pitches are moving away from that side of the plate. At that point, I wasn't able to do that. I did not have a good curveball my senior year of college. And he kept calling it. And he was asking me to be somebody that I wasn't. And whether I was going to get the results or not, I don't know. But if I had thrown more changeups than curveballs, I would have had a better year. And senior year was my worst year of college, and that is in part why. Because we just never got on the same page when it came to pitch calling, and that always frustrated me. I felt bad for Sonny Gray that he's being put into this organizational box, and it's adversely affecting him. Now, as she said, his last start against the Astros, now he threw more fastballs, and that is good, and that helped him. He had a much better start. But if the Yankees are ruining Sonny Gray with their philosophy, then I do. I feel bad for him. Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. When we come back, enough's enough. Enough is enough. Major League Baseball and the NBA, they need a rule. And that's next on Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas. Only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, final segment, Champlain Valley Game Night. Final segment of the week on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Red Sox lineups coming up 10 minutes from now. First pitch, 8:05. Rick Porcello on the mound for Boston as they look to get back on the wagon after yesterday's loss, in which David Price did not pitch well again. He gave up 7 earned runs in that start and has really struggled over the last 3 starts for him. Ever since he left that start against the Yankees with that numbness in his fingers, he has not been the same that he was in his first 2 starts. All right, it's time. It's already time. Major League Baseball and the NBA need to adopt the rule. So you watch teams. I'll say this first. They need to adopt a rule that there needs to be a minimum amount of spending on your roster. There needs to be a minimum amount of spending on your roster. Here is what the situation is. 7 teams in Major League Baseball right now are on track to lose 100 games. It's unacceptable. The problem with the NBA is that, let's backtrack again, what makes football so great is that there's always a degree of hope. Even if your teams come and go between good and bad every year. Jacksonville was 3-13 2 years ago. This year, AFC Championship game. Okay? That kind of story happens every year. The Rams, awful. NFC West champs this year. Teams can get good real quick through free agency, through the draft, through some regression on other teams because, you know, quarterbacks take up money, whatever it is. Teams in the, there is more parity and a better chance for a quick fix in the NFL. Okay? You don't have to tank horribly in the NFL to get good. Even if you tank for a year to get that number one pick to get that great quarterback, you're instantly back in the game next year if you get it right. Remember the Colts 1-15 suck for luck? Then they're in the AFC title game 2 years in a row, I believe. That's how quickly it can happen in the NFL, and that's what makes the NFL so great. What's so annoying about the NBA is that you've got 4 or 5 really, really good teams, you've got 6 or 7 really, really garbage teams that are tanking it the way the Sixers did. And we talk about the process, and we talk about the Sixers and how fun they were, at least down the stretch of this season. They win 50-plus games after losing 70 games just a few years ago. What you don't realize is that there was 4 or 5 years of agony for those fans and for that head coach and for that organization, and guys lost their jobs over that. And it's not going away, because every success story like the Sixers gives other teams hope that tanking is the way to go. The Houston Astros, the Chicago Cubs, they bottomed out. They won World Series. This is going to continue to happen. Teams gut their payroll, they get awful, and they think that's the way to get good. And you know what? I can't disagree with them. That is the way to get good. Bottom out, get draft picks, and then when you're ready, then strike in free agency, and then you end up like the Astros and win a World Series. Okay? I don't want to see that anymore. Already, I don't want to see it. And let's look at what leagues do. The NFL requires you over a 4-year span to spend 89% of your salary cap. Over a 4-year span, you need to spend 89% of your salary cap. So let's just simplify the numbers. Let's just say the salary cap is $1 million a year. Well, over 4 years total, your salary cap is $4 million. Over that 4 years, you need to have spent 89% of that $4 million. That's how the NFL works. So you can gut your roster and bottom out 1 year, but you better be prepared to massively overspend the next few years so you can hit that number. You have to do that so that you have a chance of being competitive. The NBA, they have a rule in place. All they say is that you need to spend 90% of your salary cap over the course of a season. That sounds like a big number, but you could tank for 65 games and then just take on a massive contract somewhere off someone's hands and sit the guy on the bench forever, and you will still absorb that money, and you say you're hitting the rules. I asked Buster Olney about this on Wednesday. I said, Buster, does baseball have a rule, and should they have a rule about minimum spending?
Yes, they should, and no, they don't have a rule. For example, this is either 2012 or 2013 when the Astros were really god-awful. They finished one season, guys, in which they had one player making over $1 million on their entire roster. The Philadelphia Phillies, you know, who could easily sustain a $150 million payroll. They cut back in terms of the, you know, the players who were actually on the field for them, something in the range of $50 to $60 million.
I don't know how, because baseball doesn't have a salary cap, a hard salary cap. I don't know what the number is, what the percentage is that you say you have to spend, but there needs to be a number set, and teams have to hit that because teams can afford it. And I understand that there's all, I understand that teams are in different stages of rebuilding processes, and the way the Marlins look is different than the way the White Sox look, which is different than the way the Reds look. But there's no guarantee that it works for those teams like it worked for Houston and like it worked for the Cubs. There's no way. There's no guarantee. I don't want to see a league where, look, I'm a Mariners fan. I'm desperate for them to make the playoffs, and I'd love for them to pile up wins. But do I want to see them, you know, do I want to see them miss out on the playoffs because a team in the AL Central was able to beat up on the rest of its division? Do I want to see, I just don't want to see that as a fan. I don't want to see my team get pummeled for 4 years on the hope that they might get good. I don't want to see other teams stack up wins because teams in their division are tanking. That's not the, that's not the way sports. That's why the NBA is uninteresting to some people. There's 6-7 teams that are garbage. Can you tell me any player on the Orlando Magic right now? Can you tell me any player on the Phoenix Suns right now? No, because these teams are tanking and they're horrible. And that's uninteresting to most fans. But Buster Olney said, he told us, he continued, this isn't going away.
No lose situation, guys, because if you're a general manager, let's say you're Derek Jeter, and you go to your owners and you say, okay, we're going to slash our payroll by $50 million, we're going to cut it to the bone, we're going to trade away all the good players. Best case scenario is we get the number one pick or number two pick, and we get a superstar like a Chris Bryant, a Bryce Harper. Worst case scenario is you guys make a lot of money.
So there you go. No lose situation for the owners. And you, the fans, we, the fans, take the brunt of the frustration. Yeah, it is fun if you're a Sixers fan to say, I stuck with them through the hard times. When it pays off, then it maybe it all becomes worth it, okay? Now, look, the Mariners have been trying to win for the last 20 years. They haven't been tanking. They've just been bad. If they made the playoffs this year or any other, trust me, I would be the first one standing on the rock saying, I was here with this team from the beginning. Believe that. But you know what? If that can be avoided, if multiple years of 60 and 102 game season record seasons can be avoided, let's do it. Let's put a minimum spending requirement in baseball. Let's just say you got a 25-man roster. You better be spending at minimum $40 million. I don't even know. That's a low payroll. But you better be at minimum spending $50 million, $70 million. I don't know what it is, but put a minimum spending requirement in so that teams at least have to act like they're trying to be competitive. Because it's ridiculous as to what's going on right now to see seven teams on pace for 100 losses. That's not what fans want to see. That's not good for baseball. And then it makes other places, it makes places undesirable for free agents to go because you see how awful teams are, and you see that they're trying to get awful. They can't get anybody even if they wanted to. So that is very frustrating. All right, Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com on this Friday. Red Sox and Rangers lineups from Globe Life Park in Arlington. It used to just be the ballpark at Arlington, but from Globe Life Park in Arlington. Sox and Rangers. We got to get a little music here first. Let's see here. Pitching matchup, Rick Porcello for the Sox. He's 4-0 with a 2.23 ERA, 38 strikeouts over the course of the year. He goes up against the 44-year-old Bartolo Colon. Big Sexy, they say. 1-0 with a 2.87 ERA. He carries a 2.87 ERA over six outings, four of which are starts. He did give up a couple of homers, though, his last time out. Lineup for the Sox, Mookie Betts is in right, 370. An AL leading 12 home runs, 25 RBIs. Andrew Benintendi, 248, a homer and 15 ribbies. Hanley Ramirez at first, 300, three homers, 17 ribbies. JD Martinez is the DH, hitting 345, six homers, 24 ribbies. What a good acquisition he has been. Xander Bogaerts hits fifth at short, 365, three homers, 15 ribbies. Rafael Devers is at third, 261, 4, and 21. Eduardo Nunez hitting 243. He's got three homers. He hits seventh and plays second. Jackie Bradley Jr. is in center, hitting just 180. Sandy Leon is the catcher, hitting just 118, and he hits ninth. For the Rangers, they come in today 13-20, last place in the AL West. Delino DeShields is the leadoff man in center field, the son of former Dodger and Expo speedster Delino DeShields. Shin-Soo Chu, the former Mariner, Indian, Red, he is the DH, 258, 5 homers, 15 ribbies. Jurickson Profar moves up in the lineup, plays shortstop, hits third today at 244. Nomar Mazara had a homer yesterday. He hits 285. He's got 6 homers. He plays right field. Joey Gallo's in left, hitting fifth. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, he hits sixth and plays third base, hitting 276. Ronald Guzman hits seventh. He's at first. Robinson Chirinos, the catcher, hits eighth. And Drew Robinson, the second baseman, hits ninth, just hitting 182. That's the Red Sox and Rangers lineup. Remember, all kinds of sports coming up this weekend. Sox and Rangers tonight. Over the weekend, Sox and Texas again on Saturday. And then on Sunday, we'll have the afternoon game. Also on 101.3 ESPN this weekend, the Kentucky Derby on Saturday. Sunday, we've also got Sunday night baseball between the Cubs and Cardinals. Over on AM 960, The Zone, you're going to want to flip it over right now. Intern Logan's chomping at the bit to get out of here. Bruins taking on the Lightning. Game number 4. We'll have the Celtics on tomorrow night, 4:30. The coverage will start. And then Sunday back at it, game 5 for the Bees. Hopefully that's not an elimination game for them. Have a great weekend, everybody. Stay safe. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN.
Coming up on Sports Saturday at 10:20, it's Patriots beat writer Tom King. He